I can put it on your t-shirt. That's my chalkboard.
Are the walls chalkboards in the...
So are the walls chalkboards in the bistro? So yes. So so we encourage you to use them.
Really?
So really.
Let's go through a lot of chalk.
We go through a lot of chalk? Yes, we do. So, I mean, the thing is, this was designed, so this building cost around about $30 million to build. And it was designed to be basically the best, perfect place to do physics on the Earth. So they actually, the architects consulted with a lot of physicists and talked to them and said, look, you know, what do you want? And the physicists said, we want lots of chalkboards. So then she made lots of chalkboards. And you see in the building. All throughout there were research lounges. Did you see the chalkboards on the way up?
Yeah,
so you'll see those. That in the cloud hall, here's a chalkboard. And so often you see physicists having lunch, you'll see some most probably tomorrow. And you know, you're having lunch, you have an idea, I'm talking with Michael, and then you just start writing with the chalkboard. So if there's not chalk out here, there's some chalk in the
floor.
Do you guys use like high quality expensive chalk?
He's the best. Yeah. Does anyone have any serious?
So because it's just like, it's kind of like a hard area to break into, and a lot of people are really competitive, right? So if you have people writing on the walls, what's stopping anyone from stealing an idea? Is there like some sort of trust code at this place?
So when you said no photo, does it include the chalkboard too? So technically we can't take somebody's random photo.
Well, do you think that it's, you want to steal?
I know the photos.
You can take photos of the chalkboards. So yeah, you can. So I'm not saying there's no. I wouldn't be lying to say that there's no competitiveness in physics, but I think you'll be surprised. It's a very. I mean, I did research in physics. I'm still doing a little bit now for years and years, and pretty much no one really steals your ideas. So part of the reason is, you know, most physicists, like most people, are just honest people, so I feel bad about stealing someone else's idea. And also, because it's so specialized, it would be kind of obvious if you stole someone's idea. So if someone had this long 20 pages of precise mathematical stuff worked out, and you happen to come up with exactly the same stuff that they did, and produce that and publish that as a paper, and pass it up and say, oh, I made this up yourself. It's just incredibly, incredibly unlikely that you would have come up with that. It would be kind of like if the night before Shakespeare was about to publish Romeo and Juliet, I stole that. And then you know, said, oh, independently, I just happened to write that up myself. People wouldn't really believe that. So, I mean, one thing where, I mean, it happens a lot more, I mean, I don't know, I shouldn't say this, but it does happen a lot more in the humanities and the arts. And I know people in history that are very careful of telling people about their work because they're worried about people stealing their work. But it really doesn't happen in physics. So pretty much in people, we have about 300 visitors a year. We have visitor scientists from all over the world that come here. And so there are people that see the chalkboards that are not from Perimeter Institute. It's not really a big issue. So, and the thing is, people working in teams will feed off ideas from other people. So, so one thing I will say is also this: you see outside, we actually have an outdoor chalkboard. So, this is a big idea.
What if it rains? What if you roll like a whole chalkboard and the next day?
It rains. That could be a problem. Yeah, that'd be a problem.
You just say you have another chalkboard.
No, we use it. We seriously don't get used by it. Yes.
Do they ever erase your work, or do you have to do it yourself?
Do we ever erase your work? So yeah, eventually, if you leave it out there for a couple of days, people erase it. So it does get erased.
And that's how you lost quantum gravity.
That's right. Yeah. Does anyone have any more questions on chalkboards?
Sorry to be nervous.
Okay, so we'll give you a tour of the building later on today, and you'll get to see more of the slides. Okay, so One of the reasons why it's hard to get a theory of quantum gravity, hard to combine quantum mechanics or quantum physics with general relativity, is they operate on completely different principles. And so quantum mechanics, you have a lot of fluctuations in quantum mechanics. You have Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. If you have a particle, an electron, you can't know exactly where it is and how fast it's moving. And so there's this randomness, this disorder in quantum mechanics. So that's on the one hand, at the macroscopic, microscopic, subatomic level. At the macroscopic level, general relativity, they have these sort of curved space-time, this sort of smooth manifold, if you like, and you don't get this sort of random disordered fluctuations that you get in quantum physics. So, kind of philosophically or just conceptually, there's a difference between the two, and they just don't kind of mesh when you put them together. And so quantum mechanics says that pretty much everything fluctuates. The positions of particles, their momenta, also fields, you know, about gravitational fields and electric fields. They are not just sort of still and static and unchanging, they have random fluctuations too. And so quantum mechanics, if you apply quantum mechanics naively to gravity, it says that the gravitational field fluctuates. And maybe you've seen kind of diagrams, maybe you have Earth here with field lines. Are you happy with those? Anyway, this is a diagram that kind of shows you sort of, if you did put a mass here, just how it would be attracted to the Earth. Maybe you've seen something similar with a positively electrically charged particle. So, and this is sort of E, the electric field. And this could be a proton or something like that, the positive electric charge. And I guess this would just the gravitational field. So. So really, these are just diagrams that kind of just represent, in a sense, the flow of forces. Because if you put a little tiny proton here, light charge is repelled, so it would get pushed in that direction. If you put it there, it would get pushed in that direction. This is where we get these diagrams from, and these are sort of field line diagrams. So that's the gravitational field. And if we apply quantum mechanics to the gravitational field, it should say that it fluctuates. It's randomly sort of fluctuating and moving and is not static. And generally, what happens in quantum mechanics? So one thing about general relativity, so this is getting a little bit advanced, but so quantum mechanics says that gravity fluctuates, gravitational field fluctuates. But the way you actually represent, Einstein represented gravity, so the gravitational field, was saying that it's essentially space and time. So gravity, there's actually no force of gravity. I'm going way into advanced stuff here, but I think you can handle it. There's actually no force of gravity, but all you have is just space and time. And that actually gets warped by matter and energy. And it all just kind of follow contours in that. And that's actually what gravity is. So imagine I get a trampoline and get a bowling ball and put the bowling ball in the middle of the trampoline. What the trampoline does, it sags down, or the surface of that warps. And so just as you get that with a trampoline and a bowling ball, what happens is the sun and the earth actually kind of bend and warp the space and the time around them. And then what gravity is just is objects following the contours in that warping. Just as, for example, if you have sort of a hill or a valley going down, you have little ravines in that. And you have some water flowing downhill, it follows all the little valleys and the curves and the contours, kind of the path of least resistance. And so just as you kind of get that happening, analogously, that's how particles move through space and time. And that's the explanation in general relativity for why is the Earth revolving around the sun. So there's no force of gravity according to Einstein. Michael will talk about this later on. I'm going way off into a tangent, but it's really, there's no actual force. Q keeping the Earth revolving around the sun. All it is just the sun has kind of warped the space and the time around it, and the Earth is following, actually, in some sense, the most natural path around the sun. Yes?
I have two questions. Number one, if gravity is not a force, how come it has to be unified?
Sorry?
If gravity is not a force, how come it has to be, like, unified with quantum mechanics?
Ah, so is there, so does it absolutely have to be, and do we absolutely know for certain that there is a unified theory of gravity and quantum gravity? The answer is no. Did Newton know before he actually got a universal theory of gravitation that there had to be just only one gravitational force for an apple and everything else here on Earth and the planets in the solar system? No. Did Maxwell know that electricity and magnetism had to be unified? No, we don't know. And it's possible that there is quantum physics and there are completely different laws applied to gravity, and that's a good question. If gravity is not a force, why should we unify it with the three fundamental forces, the electromagnetism, the weak and the strong nuclear forces? So all we know is that if you look at the history of physics, the scientists that have believed that and followed that approach is we can show example after example where that has worked. And we have had simplified theories. And it would be really bizarre if it had worked for centuries and centuries to get this more unified, really elegant description that it just failed in this case. So for most reasons, you know, we something that worked 20 times that we found the 21st time. So it's just very compelling to most physicists. It's hard to think of there's no logical deductive argument for it, but it's a very, very compelling thing. Surely there's going to be one beautiful law of physics in our universe. So.
And you know how you said that there's like a cubic space time, it could be like a sheet, and then in the sheet they create a dip?
Yep.
But since space time is 3D,
yeah.
How do you look at different planes? Or, like, what do you do?
Yeah. See, this is the point where I say, patiently wait for Michael's talk next week and ask him. So it's very hard. So it's three dimensions of space, one dimension of time. And then you have this four. So what you have to do is think of a four-dimensional object. Think in four dimensions. And then think about those four dimensions as being warped. And that's all you need to do.
Okay,
so it's very hard. I cannot visualize it. But you can use analogies with lower dimensions. That's about the best you do. Michael will does an excellent job of explaining that. Good question. Yep.
And do just planets warp space time, or do like we warp space time?
You warp space time. You are responsible, right? Space planet.
Okay, so if we warp space
time. You actually, as you move now, you're
if we warp space-time, then particles warp space-time, right?
Yep.
Then how come you can't take gravity and put it into the small to unify it?
Like, take it down to the molecular level. I'm just about to get here. You're ahead of me. Excellent question. What I should say is you actually do warp space and time. But if you actually look at the scale that you do, it's minuscule. It's very, very small. Gravity is a very weak force, and even the sun does not warp space and time that much. It's a big, gravity is incredibly important. Michael's going to talk about that. So, excellent question. So, so with these fluctuations, so if gravity is just space and time and the warping of space and time, like the trampoline surface warping, then and we apply quantum physics to gravity. If quantum physics says that everything fluctuates, fields fluctuates, it says that gravity fluctuates and there's random fluctuations of gravity. But if gravity is space and time, then space and time fluctuate. And this we're naively trying to unify quantum gravity. People try this. But the point generally in quantum mechanics, so really, so quantum physics plus GR equals space fluctuates. Space time and time are really sort of important. Space and time fluctuate. And generally, what you have is if you look at fluctuations on a smaller and smaller. So it's kind of weird to think of space and time fluctuating. It's hard to get your head around what that just means. But if you kind of go along with me now, like imagine, say, the surface of a lake. If it gets windy or there are some ripples in that, we can imagine think of that as fluctuating. So that's kind of an analogy for what I mean. Thinking of time fluctuating, that's a very hard. I have a lot of trouble.
It speeds up and slows down and gets.
Well, it's that could be one way of looking, but it's a probabilistic thing, and no one really knows. But that's a good attempt. Yes.
So if the proof that space and time fluctuated, would you be unifying quantum physics?
So if you could get a consistent mathematical description of that, and it was verified by experiment, and we already know. And if it applied to everything down to quantum level, then yes. I mean, we already know that space and time fluctuates, so if you could get a consistent theory of that, and it was proved by experiment, we just might as well hand you the Nobel Prize.
How do you
mean
space and time fluctuate? Can you, like, define that? Sort of? Maybe just, like, Heisenberg? Sort of thing?
So the analogy would be if you had the bowling ball and the trampoline surface, the analogy, so what would it mean for the surface of the trampoline to fluctuate? In a sense, it could just sort of wiggle up and down. And so that's kind of what I mean. If you think roughly as space as being like this fabric everywhere, it's actually fluctuating. So it's very hard. We don't really fully understand what that means physically. But does that give you a little bit of a sense?
Yeah, like, you mean it's like any warping is fluctuation, or does it have to be moving, sort of? Is that, or do you not know at all?
So no, warping is not fluctuating. It's a constant warping, so if it's warped into static and it stays being warped, that's not fluctuating. Fluctuating would be like it's changing over time. So it would be as if kind of actually space, you're kind of watching this area of space and it's actually kind of bending and stretching and warping and actually changing over time. That's what I mean by fluctuation. That would be what space would be fluctuating.
Don't, like, strings move, though? Like,
the string period. Oh, we're getting way advanced now. Strings do move in string theory.
So do they fluctuate?
Absolutely, they put on objects and they do fluctuate. So I might maybe defer some questions to later on. So there are excellent questions that you're about. Sorry, I can't answer that now. We're going to move on. Because I want to mention that generally in quantum mechanics, so we've got this idea of things fluctuate. And generally if you look at smaller and smaller scales, the fluctuations get larger and larger and bigger and more pronounced. And one way of thinking about that, if you have an electron, just a single quantum particle, and you're looking at that, you're knowing more and more about its position. You're probing it on a finer and finer energy scales. So a finer and finer. So we have this electron. If you know, say, it's in a box this big, you know something about where it is, its position. And there's some uncertainty, so we might call it delta X electron. So you can, if you find out more about it, you might know it's in a smaller box. N equals small. And and if you find out that it's in a smaller box, then you found more information about where it is, its position. And X, I just mean by the letter X, that's position. And that's actually delta, Greek letter, yes, thank you for that. And that just represents the uncertainty of change. It actually comes from statistics, just the statistical uncertainty. So that just represents some kind of change. So if we're looking in one dimension, delta X might be just a measure of this distance here. So we know it's definitely somewhere between here and here, just looking in one dimension. We have this being our X axis. And so we have delta X equals tiny. So we have that. And so what we have is, obviously, the delta X, we have position fluctuations, and they're actually, we're probing it on a smaller and smaller scale as we go from here to here. But what happens is, as we do that, we know more and more about where it is. And if we know more and more about where it is, we know less and less about how fast it's moving. And some of you may have heard about Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. That's what that says. We'll talk a little bit about more of that later on. But generally, it's not very obvious, it's not very intuitive. But the more you know about where a particle is, for some weird quantum reason, says the less you know about its velocity, about how fast it's actually moving. And if it has, and if you know less about its velocity, then there's a greater chance its velocity could be very large. If you know very little about its velocity, for all you know, its velocity could be 1 billion meters per second in some direction, or 2 billion, or 3 billion. And so generally what happens is the more you kind of confine a quantum particle, it's as if in a sense it's like a caged tiger or a caged animal, and it doesn't like being confined, so it gets more sort of energetic and more faster and faster. And way you can think about that is you know more about its position. You learn less about what its velocity is, so all you know its velocity could be huge. And if velocity is huge, then by kinetic energy equals mv squared, we'll have a very, very large amount of energy. So generally, I just want to get across the idea, the smaller and smaller scale you look at, as you go from here to here and here, the more and more energy you actually have with the fluctuations, and larger they get. In the sense of the velocity fluctuation. So these fluctuations get bigger and bigger. Because here we have smaller scale, we have very large... So really, that's all the idea we're going to get at. Sort of looking at a teeny tiny scale, you're confining this quantum particle, very, very small scale, and from Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, you don't have any idea about the velocity, so you don't have any idea about the energy. So for all you know, it could be massive. So you get these very, very large energies. You want to take one more question now? Yes?
Is that got something to do with entropy?
Probably it may... Not directly, maybe not really, not directly at least anyway, because we're not really entropy sort of not looking at entropy now. It's just really position and momentum. Certainly, you can explain it without entropy. This follows from Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. There may be maybe there is a way of thinking about it in terms of entropy, but that's not the standard way of thinking about it. So that's really all I want to get across there. And so if we have these fluctuations of space, and we actually look at space and time at a smaller scale. So we look at space and time at a... Guys, could you please? Thank you. Look at space at a smaller and smaller scale, then we have bigger and bigger energy fluctuations. And what those energy fluctuations, if the sun warps space and time, if you warp space and time, more energy, more matter warps space and time even more. So a black hole is a lot of mass combined to a very, 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 very small amount of space. So that massively, infinitely warps space and time. And so you actually get sort of greater and greater warping. So if you naively take quantum physics plus general relativity, and you look at a smaller and smaller scale, then what you do is you get more and more energy fluctuations. You get bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually you reach a certain scale, and that's actually the scale of quantum gravity, where the fluctuations are so big, you just start spontaneously creating black holes, wormholes, which are actually shortcuts in space and time, from one place to another, and basically this idea of space and time is this standard sort of normal idea that we have in our minds. It just breaks down completely. And so basically the theory just doesn't work. It just collapses. And so So what that leads to is just kind of the collapse. Collapse or breakdown of space and time. And so that's bad, because you want space and time in your theory. What's the theory of the universe without any sensible idea of space and time? It just doesn't make sense. We know. I mean, we're all existing in time now. We're all existing somewhere in space, so it doesn't make any sense. So I guess I should put sort of naively, so we've kind of all straightforwardly, so so the most obvious thing to do, and people did try this and they found out this result that seems to happen, is we just get the breakdown of space at a particular scale. It's actually a length scale. So hopefully that kind of got the cross section now. But the question is, what scale? Is it 1 meter? Is it 1 millimeter? Is it 1 nanometer? Whatever. So what we're actually going to do is you are going to derive that scale for me. Some of you may know it already, but you're actually going to derive that. And so by this tool we've been using before, so you kind of went essentially derive the dimensions of G for me, and we derive the dimensions of acceleration. Now we're going to derive the dimensions of, let's call it L with the little p down the bottom. So, because, I don't know, it seems like a good thing to do. not the dimensions, really, what the value actually is. So, and we'll call that, forget about that. So we're looking for a length at which space and time break down when naively combine quantum physics and general relativity. And so what we're doing is we're combining quantum physics with general relativity. So the most important concept, the most important constant in that defines the quantum scale is H, and that's a Planck's constant. And that's joule seconds. And so that's quantum physics. And so we want to combine that with gravity and with relativity. So with gravity, we have the universal gravitational constant. And I should, by 10 to the minus 11, and that's meters cubed, kilograms to the minus 1, seconds to the minus 2. But what I should mention, so some people, especially if you're from Europe, maybe you might not have seen that, or maybe you might be more familiar with not that, but a comma down below, like that. So that's just the same thing, that's equivalent to so I'll probably be using this, but when I have this here, it just means a decimal point for a comma. Does that make sense? Great. Okay. So that's quantum physics. We've got gravity. But gravity is part of relativity. And so relativity is all about light and the speed of light. Because if Einstein's theory of relativity, both special and general, were maximum speed, any material object is c, the speed of light. And you know the speed of light is 3 by 10 meters per second. And so if we want to combine quantum physics with gravity and general relativity, or GR, because general relativity is obviously too long a word for this to write again. So what we'll have is we'll have something that will have dimensions of length or units of meters, for example, in standard units, that will make up just from quantum just from H, and just from general relativity, just from G and C. And it turns out that really there's only one way, there's a unique way to combine those three constants to give you something that has dimensions of length, that has this length. And what, so there's only one way of doing it, so the length you get from combining quantum and general relativity will be a very, very special length. And that length is actually the length scale which, naively, if you apply quantum physics and general relativity, there seems to be this breakdown of space. Because all we've done is we've just taken the big core, most important concepts of general relativity and quantum physics. We've combined those together. We've got out this length. And it's the only length we can get. So it's got to be the length scale of quantum gravity. And that length scale of quantum gravity is the length scale of which time and space kind of defines it, just as the scale of 1 meter, roughly speaking, defines humans, and the scale of 10 to the minus 10 meters defines the scale of an atom. So what is the scale of quantum gravity? So this is a question I'd like you to ask me now. So so the question is, So what combination of those three basic constants, quantum physics and general relativity, gives dimensions of length? So for example, what are the dimensions of C multiplied by G? Are they dimensions of length? I don't know. So there's some way, one and only one way, to combine those three constants to give you something that has dimensions of length. And when you do that, that will actually give you the scale of quantum gravity. Because that's the first question, because when you get that, is you get some combination of those. And using the numerical values, you have each using numerical values for these three constants here. If I could just have your attention for a minute, I'll stop talking in a minute. What you can do is you get the numerical values, you get the expression. Maybe it's C multiplied by G. Just say, assume that it does have dimensions of length. We'll be looking at analyzing dimensions. What you can do is then plug the value of C into that, plug the value of G into there, multiply them together, and then that will give you a number, and that will be a length scale. It could be a meter, half a meter, 10 to the minus 20 meters, whatever. That will be the scale of quantum gravity. That will actually give you the scale. And you'll be deriving that. So, okay, does anyone have any questions about that? Okay, great, away you go. No, it's just a factor of 2 pi. No.
Because then you can't see this continuous
function. You mean?
Yeah. H bar.
Nah, it's only a factor of 2 pi. No, I think you can easily get either one. It doesn't matter. They have the same units. Question? Okay. If I could have your attention for a second. Okay, so if you're happy to just keep going and want to work it on for yourself, just go for it. I'll write up a couple of. There's a number of steps to this. It's not an easy problem. It's hard. If you can find it, then that's fine. I'll just write a couple of hints along the way right now. And if you want to look at those, then look at those. If you don't want to, then that's fine. Just go for that. And if anyone does solve this, we have some more questions. Someone was asking about, so if you don't want to look at the hint, don't look at that for it.
It's easy.
Does that help?
Some people find it easy. The trick is one of the most important things.
Okay, so there's a way of doing it with, the way of doing it with time and with mass. What are the equivalent times and masses? And then what are their physical significances?
Yeah.
Thank you.
The best thing to be able to do is sometimes you're missing a piece.
What are the numerical values? And what is the 2000 Indians? How do you do it? How do you do all those? All I'm hearing is complaints, I'm not hearing any answers.
Thank you.
Oh, right, yeah, I think so one variety is a kind of
I'm
We'll give you 5 more minutes, and then we're going to take a lunch break. Lunch is ready, and then we just revisit it, go through the answer after lunch. So just kind of, does anyone have any questions, need any help?
No questions.
Maybe
just like.
What did you just find? You found the scale of quantum gravity.
What is it? Is it represented by letter?
Yes, it is. It's represented by.
Are we doing a scientific location?
Yep.
So we're doing one more place.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not too fussed about that. Sometimes it's L, P, or plane place. Where's the essay? So it's plane plane. It's really, it's really the scale of this kind of effects that where they meet, combined for also, what energies would you need to probe that scale? What energies do you need to probe that scale? That's not a problem. And how big a particle accelerator? And then design experiment that can probe that scale. So, if I can have your attention now, so we'll continue this after the break, I'll give you the answer. Then we'll get on to some other things. But I'd like to introduce one new staff member. So unfortunately, he wasn't there last night because he was hard at work solving the problem or working towards the problem of quantum gravity. But this is John Hackett. Would you like to describe yourself and what you're working on? And
So I'm actually starting as a graduate student at the Institute in the fall with Lee Smolling, who's going to be one of your keynote speakers soon. Primarily, I'm kind of working on modified versions of something called free quantum gravity, which is an approach to quantum gravity, where you begin to look at these mathematical structures that arise in these approaches and find particle physics as this kind of offshoot thing. So it's a kind of backwards attempt of grand unification, where you try not to get grand unification and it falls into your lap. So that's pretty much what I have to find myself.
If you have any easy questions, ask me. If you have any hard questions, ask John. If you have any really hard questions, Michael's not here, ask him. So we have some pizza out there. Is that a problem? And some drinks and so forth.
Yeah.
The drinks are out there. They should be pretty soon. So we can just stay here for a minute. So what we'll have is the procedure. So lunch will be from 12 to 1. So it's a public holiday, so all our kitchen staff aren't here. So unfortunately, we had to get pizza for you. But every other day, we have essentially it's a restaurant there. So what we have is, again, we want to have this building so that the science, so it's everything self-inclusive. So that every other day, it'll actually be a buffet or a smorgasbord style lunch out there from 12 to 1. So we're starting a little bit late, about 5 past. So what we'll do, probably about 5 past 1, we'll come back. So we'll give you an hour for lunch. So we'll give you a little bit of a tour in the afternoon. So actually today, and also generally, please don't go off wandering too far throughout the building. You might get lost, you might never see you again. So if you just kind of stay around here, you're welcome to go to the washrooms. But if you can save your curiosity until after lunch, we'll give you a bit more of a tour of the building. And we'll actually go through the answers. If anyone wanted a bit more of a hint, probably hint 3 would be a try.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Sorry? You can go outside onto the balcony there, yes. You can. We'll go through the answer, and that will give us the length scale of quantum gravity effects. So, basically, if you just go out there now, lunch has started.